This episode of Pub Talk Live was broadcast on April 11th, 2020, with guest co-host Julia Ember and special guest Rita Mead.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the April 11th episode of Pub Talk Live, a live publishing talk show airing the second and fourth Saturday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm your host, Sarah Nicholas. I'm a young adult author, a board member and agent liaison for Push Floors, and a library event planner. You can subscribe to reminders via email by clicking on the link on the description so you don't miss a show. You can also follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Pub Talk Live. And again, if you'd like to support the show, you can find a link to the Patreon near the end of the video description down below as well. And now I'm going to bring in our guest host, who I'm very excited to have on the show because I have wanted her to have it. She's actually on the first list that I developed of guests that I wanted on the show. And so our guest co-host today is Julia Ember. Julia is an author of young adult fantasy fiction, best known for her creative retellings of classic works. Her books include the Seafarer's Kiss duology, a Norse myth-inspired retelling of The Little Mermaid, and Ruinsong, a standalone high fantasy reimagining of The Phantom of the Opera, forthcoming in November 2020. So please welcome Julia.
Hello.
Hey. Heather's here. Jay's here. Oh, you forgot to ask questions on Patreon. I mean, you can put them in here. We may have some time for them. So go ahead and drop them in here whenever we introduce Rita. How are you doing, Julia?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. How about you?
All right. I'm literally in the process of moving. So I am currently surrounded by moving boxes, but I left all my filming stuff up.
I mean, I like your space background. Like, that's a creative solution to the moving chaos.
I love it.
So
that's always there. It's a cloth that's there. So
well, I wasn't sure if it was that or if it was like one of the Zoom backgrounds that people
were putting. No. Yeah. You can do green screen on StreamYard, but I don't think my computer has the processing power to do that.
One of my wife's coworkers used it to put in someone else's apartment behind her, and she had like convinced all these people that it was her apartment when it wasn't.
One of my friends has a picture of her cube as one of the backdrops she can put on.
Amazing.
It has been 9 weeks since my last haircut. You can probably tell now.
I think I'm about that long. I got my fringe cut like right before I went into lockdown, which was lucky because otherwise it would be like to my nose already. Yeah. But I'm already like, I'm going to have to cut it soon. So,
yeah, luckily I'm moving in with my parents and my mom's actually, well, she was a beautician, so she knows how to cut hair. So,
mine is just going to look like a hacksaw job because I'm probably going to cut into it like a 5-year-old and just be like, oh, I'm going to feather my hair. And then it's going to be.
All right. So we have the viewer poll is still up for a little bit longer. You can go vote on that. And the question is, are you reading more or less than usual in the time of COVID-19? And we'll talk about the results of that at the end. And I also just dropped the link to vote in that poll in the comments. So you can find that on the comments. Oh, we have a couple more people joining us. Cool. Heather said hi, Julia. Jennifer is here. Hey, hi, Pubbers. I said it for the first time in the Patreon. I said, hey, Pubbers, and I was like, So Julia, and anyone else who may be new to the show, during the Coastal Magic episode, actually, the community, the regulars that we always have watching, they gave themselves a name, so they're called Pubbers.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just taking the time to grow my hair. I was like, should I use this time to like grow through the awkward stage of growing a pixie cut out? Like, I love my pixie cut, but I also kind of want changes. Beth says, hi, Pubbers. Hey, Kevin. Kevin is Beth's husband. We need t-shirts. We do need t-shirts. Jennifer, you're like the t-shirt queen. All right. We're going to get into news, but just a fair warning, pretty much almost all of it is about coronavirus related things, unfortunately. Eventually we're gonna have normal news again.
Hopefully.
The first item, though, is actually nice. I think might be the only one that's not related. The Hugo Award finalists were announced last week. The Hugo is science fiction's most prestigious award. That's what it says on their website, anyway. A full list of finalists can be seen at the Hugo Awards website or at the link that will be in the description later tonight. So if this is your first time watching this show, later tonight, after we get done here, I drop all the links for all the news items that we are talking about, so you can read more about them if you want to know more about them. So I had a couple of friends who were nominated. Fran Wild, who was on the show a couple months ago, is nominated in two categories.
I'm really behind in my Hugo reading, and I'm a member of SFWA, so they've been sending through the email at least once a week, being like, everyone check out the entries and go and vote. And it's like on my to-do list for next week, especially for short fiction, because I feel like with a lot of the short stories and the novellas, which are often really amazing, the ones that get Hugo nominated, like I could probably read all of them in an afternoon, because a lot of them are 1,000 words, 1,200 words. But yeah, I love watching the Hugo Awards. And I think this year they're going to be live streaming the awards. So that will be fun.
The whole conference is going to be.
The whole conference, yeah. And the Nebulas as well, they're going to be live streaming. So.
Yeah, I read a couple of them. I think the most notable is This Is How You Lose the Time War. This Is How You Lose the Time War. That's right. Okay. And I read that one like in a physical book, which I don't do very often, but I really enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I'm excited it's moved online. Like it'll be my social event of that week, and I'll probably get my wine and go to the conference. Okay, so Ingram is the latest to drop out of the Book Expo and BookCon, joining all the big five publishers. But Read Exhibition still has not canceled the event, which is currently scheduled to start July 22nd.
Yeah. How are they going to?
I don't think so. I mean, the Javits Center is currently a hospital, so
yeah.
It would seem wild to me that they would go ahead with it. I mean, I know they've already pushed it back by 2 months. So we'll see. I mean, it's possible that by July 22nd, it will be good to go. But I don't even know, like, what the conversion process from the like converting the Javits Center back from being a hospital into being a convention center will look like and how long that will take.
And what is Book Expo and BookCon gonna look like if
if all the major publishers
have pulled out.
I'm not sure what it would look like. I mean the big five publishers and like the distributors probably take up 2/3 of the exhibit hall. I went in 2017 and 2018, and that was definitely true in terms of floor space. So yeah, I have no idea what it would look like if they didn't cancel. So
Jennifer said their contract must be a devil. Yeah, I wonder if it's either that or something insurance related why they haven't canceled. Because it seems to me like that all the big publishers have been canceled for at least I think 2 weeks now.
Yeah, I mean it could be. There's a lot of speculation about that with Emerald City Comic Con here in Seattle because they spent a really long time not canceling the event as like DC Comics and like a lot of the big event bookers or the exhibitor space people were dropping out left and right. And so a lot of people thought it was probably insurance related and they had to wait until they were directed. So yeah.
Yeah, there is a little bit of echo. You're on your headphones though, right?
Yeah, I'm on my headphones.
So weird. I wonder what that is. Let me check my camera mic settings real quick just to make sure. Oh, let's try this.
That might help a little bit. Does that help? Yes, I was using the wrong mic. All right, cool. StreamYard has had selected the wrong mic. So, all right, I'm glad that's fixed. This is some good news. You may have seen on social media that people, especially in the UK, have been putting bears in their front windows to entertain children on walks. And this is, of course, mainly like suburban type areas, not urban areas. But what I didn't realize until I saw this article that we're going to link in the description is this was inspired by a children's book called We're Going on a Bear Hunt by Michael Rosen.
Oh, that's really cute. I hadn't heard about the bears. I'd heard about the rainbows. Mm-hmm. That they're doing, especially in Edinburgh. But yeah, that book is really popular in the UK. I used to live in the UK for about 10 years. So it doesn't surprise me that's the one they chose, but that's really cute.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I, because I had seen some people like posting on social media about it, but I didn't really see anybody over here doing it, at least in my neighborhood. But, and I had no idea how to deal with a book. So that's cool. Oh, you have not great news.
I know. It hits especially close to home for me because Macmillan is publishing Ruinsong this year, but yeah. Macmillan has laid off staff across all divisions and enacted temporary pay cuts for some employees, implemented a hiring freeze, and closed the Thomas Dune imprint entirely, which is very sad news.
Yeah.
I don't personally know anyone who's been affected yet, but yeah, it could be a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think maybe some other publishers might end up following suit.
I mean, I've already heard that with Skyhorse, that they've already laid off like a substantial number of people. I mean, I'm not sure how fast the other big five publishers will follow suit, but I kind of expect if this drags on for too much longer in New York, that it might not be far in coming. So. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, here, I did not do this on purpose, by the way. I just did this like just real quick. I didn't realize I gave you the bad news and then gave me the bad news. So World Reader, a charity that provides ebooks to disadvantaged communities in many countries, has released several ebooks to help educate people about the threat of coronavirus. People were searching for the term on their apps, so they commissioned and published a picture book called Hello, My Name is Coronavirus, as well as another about the importance of washing hands. The organization has served 13.4 million readers in 47 countries with books in 52 languages.
I mean, my initial impression is that title is way too friendly, but I get that we're not supposed to scare the children.
So. Yeah, I had to go to Walgreens the other night, and this guy was walking in with his kid, and the kid had his shirt pulled over his face, and I was like, like, I guess he was too young to leave in the car, but so I know trying to explain to my niece why I can't come visit her, you know, has been really difficult. So hopefully that helps some people.
Yeah. I think it would be really difficult. Like my neighborhood, we don't have a lot of children in this area because it's kind of downtown, but I've seen a father and his child from our building going next door, like playing in the parking lot every day, which is just really sad because they've closed all the playgrounds around here. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, people who don't have yards, I think with kids, that's really rough right now for sure. Which
is, I mean, around here, it's everyone because it's all skyscrapers around here. Mm-hmm. Some more bad news, yay. A lot of authors are having publication dates rescheduled that were supposed to come out this spring or summer. Publishers Lunch has a document where they are keeping track of all the books they've been made aware of. I mean, I know a lot of people who've had books pushed back, especially it seems almost like for people who were coming out already in April and like the beginning of part of May, that it might already be too late and like the publishers are just deciding to roll with it.
Yeah.
So I've mostly seen this happen to friends who have books in May and like early to mid June, that they're being pushed back to like September, August, sometimes even next year. I mean, I'm kind of torn on whether I think it is bad news or good news, because I think like coming out right now would be so hard. So even though it's a bit of a wait, like I still am happy for those authors who did get pushed back a little bit, that maybe, you know, their book will have a better shot in August than it does right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every author I've seen talking about it, you know, is talking about it being bittersweet or like having mixed feelings about it. And I understand, for the people who are coming out, who came out in March, that was rough. Cause there's no way you couldn't do anything about it, but everything was shut down.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends what part of March you came. Cause I think a lot of states weren't really slowing down or shutting down until sort of second week of March. So if you came out in the first week of March, maybe you escaped. I mean, I did an event the last week of February with someone whose book had just come out. And then it was like, after that weekend, I was like, time to go into isolation, because we started hearing news about it here in Seattle, because we were really early. But yeah, I mean, I really feel for people who are in March. I mean, I think especially April. I think April is going to be really hard for everyone. So
yeah. And for me, it's like this really selfish reaction is like, but I want to read that book. Like, so many of my most anticipated books have been pushed back.
I mean, I definitely had that reaction because I just read Gideon the Ninth finally, like after a year of people being like, you must read Gideon the Ninth. I finally did it. And then I was like, wait, like the next one was supposed to be out like imminently. And now it's not. But at the same time, I'm happy for her because I think it'd be difficult to launch right now.
Mm-hmm. Cemetery Boys. I was like, no.
Yeah. I'm happy for Aiden with that though, too, because I think like he's been working so hard too to like promote his book, and like he has so many like art initiatives and everything like that. And I think too, like Aiden, he's such a like character in person.
Yeah. He lives near you, right?
Yeah, he lives near me. So I've met him a couple times, but he's such a character in person that like I think it would be a huge disservice to him if he wasn't able to like go out and like meet people around his launch time. So I'm hoping by the time it comes out, he'll be able to do that.
I have an arc of one of the books that got pushed back, Fragile Remedy. Okay. It's sitting right over there. So I just looked at it. I haven't read it yet, but at least I'll get it.
I have read Cemetery Boys and it is great. It's really, really great. I had the pleasure of listening to Aiden read one of the chapters at a retreat. And after that, I was like, this is so funny. I have to read it right away. And then I got to.
Yeah. Well, I know they were recording the audiobooks, and maybe I get a lot of audiobooks sent to me by publishers. So maybe they'll send me the audiobook.
Yeah.
Just a quick update. Last episode we discussed, Publisher Weekly has a sorted list of resources related to COVID-19. They've added more, including a roundup of different publishers offering special terms to booksellers like discounts, a list of different publishers, permissions for online read alouds and story times, and a summary of how you can support both booksellers and authors right now. So all of those links will be available in the description later tonight if you want to check out any of those resources. Oh, you have some good news. Here we go.
Okay, yeah. The National Endowment of the Arts was granted $75 million by the CARES, the Coronavirus Relief Bill, to be used for grants meant to combat nonprofit job losses related to the pandemic. Applications are now open, and the first deadline is April 22nd.
Mm-hmm. So if you're involved with an organization, especially if you've already gotten a grant from them before, they have money like earmarked for people who have received grants from them before. And then some of the money is also going to state and regional arts organizations for them to distribute. So if you're involved with a nonprofit who's suffering, like definitely check that out. I realize I'm going to skip. Oh, Jennifer asked a question. Publishers Weekly is now available for free, right? Yeah, the magazine is. I don't know if all the articles are.
I think definitely the ones that relate to coronavirus are.
Yeah, all the resource lists
being rescheduled. Yeah.
I don't know if all the articles are or not, but I know the magazine is, so you can like get the magazine because they've started. I get the Publisher's Lunch, but I don't pay for the full subscription, and they've been sending the magazine. So,
okay.
I'm gonna skip ahead because it is related to what you just said. Seven major arts organizations banded together to raise $10 million to provide $5,000 grants to artists facing financial emergencies due to the pandemic. You can apply or you can also donate at artsrelief.org. They got a $5 million grant, they raised $5 million and then they had a matching donation from, you know, some big nonprofit foundation. I gave you this one because it has your name in it.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. The owner of RJ Julia Booksellers of Connecticut was looking for a way to continue paying her employees and keep the store afloat. After finding out how many children were stopping to pick up lunches from their public school, she came up with a plan. She asked donors to purchase books through their store to be distributed to the kids picking up those free lunches. Senator Chris Murphy heard about it and sent an email to his supporters, and now the store has raised $100,000 in just one day. 7,500 kindergarten through eighth grade readers will receive a book a week for 4 weeks when they pick up their lunches. Yeah. That's a great idea.
It is.
It's a really, really great idea. I love like all the initiatives that the independent bookstores have been doing. Like I ordered a care package for both myself and my mom from the Root Goddess. But yeah, I love what they're trying to do. I mean, it must be a really hard time to be an indie bookstore right now.
Yeah, Publishers Weekly did a survey, and you should go find it. I didn't include it in the roundup, but maybe I'll drop the link when I drop the other links of different bookstores. I think that it was like 36 bookstores around the country, and the like different things that they're dealing with. And one of them actually saw like a 1,500% increase in sales.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because the community like was like, we have to, you know, save them. And yeah. So, but I thought this was like really, I hadn't heard anything like this from anyone else. And then you get the unlikely assist from, you know, Chris Murphy. So
yeah, that is unlikely.
But I thought, yeah, I thought that was cool that he helped them that way. Little free library stewards from all over the country have converted their boxes to little free pantries, providing food, toilet paper, sanitizer, toiletries, produce, and in one case, even hand-sewn face masks. And they also have one of the organizations is sending out stickers they can put on the front to indicate that they've switched it over temporarily. So
it's a good idea too.
Yeah. I haven't checked the one near me, but it's in like a Target shopping center. I don't want to go there.
Okay. I don't think I've seen any near me. Like the nearest I've seen is like out in the suburbs, but I think around here, there's just nowhere to mount them. Like I wish we could put up a little free library in front of our little townhouse, but we have nothing to mount it on. Barnes & Noble has laid off staffers with less than 6 months experience and furloughed employees with more than that, including many of their headquarters. They said the skeleton remaining number of buyers will buy new titles for what we assume will be a reduced publishing schedule. Oh, no.
I really should have arranged this better. So we had all the sad news first and then all the happy news.
I do wonder what's happening with book buying, like both at stores and also at libraries, which I'm sure we can ask Rita about when we talk to her. But I just don't know, like, are indie stores even ordering new titles right now? I'm not sure Barnes & Noble's is.
I know at my library, the building's closed and no one's there, so we're not taking deliveries.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they've, like, paused the delivery. I'm not involved with that. I'm an event planner, so... Yeah. All right. So the London Book Fair, which was canceled due to the coronavirus, has sent a letter. A lot of people were wondering about this to registered people and organizations offering either a 60% refund or 100% credit for next year's event, which is better than the nothing that some people were expecting.
Yeah.
But maybe isn't ideal either.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm surprised that they're not able to offer more, or like that they're not being subsidized by the UK government in some way to offer more comprehensive refunds. But then the UK is turning into America light in terms of their politics. So,
And I've seen like several of these big things they canceled and didn't announce any refund policy, and they're trying to like figure it out. I'm sure it's a complicated math that they have to do, but. Well, next time I will go from sad news to happy news so we can end on a happy note. But we are ending on a happy note because we're going to bring on our special guest now. So Rita Mead is a public librarian who lives and works in Brooklyn, New York. She has a background in youth services and has professionally reviewed children's books for School Library Journal and has written for literary sites including Book Riot and Reading Rainbow. Her debut picture book, Edward Gets Messy, was published in 2016 by Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers. So please welcome to the show, Rita.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? I know I've been listening to you for 30 minutes. Yeah.
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm as safe as can be, and I feel very lucky about that. So I'm counting my good luck here. And I'm happy to be talking about publishing and libraries and whatever else we get into.
Yeah.
Always a nice diversion, and it's very relevant actually to what's going on now anyway. So
So Rita and I actually got connected because I had tweeted about a library in Flagler County, which I think Jennifer is actually from in the comments, who didn't close, and then several of their employees developed coronavirus symptoms. So they closed that branch, but not the other.
Makes a lot of sense.
And it got retweeted a little bit, and Rita ended up following me, and I was like, hey, Rita would be awesome for the show. So
that's cool.
Good timing.
Good luck come out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The what's going on with libraries is unprecedented. I know that word's been sort of tossed around a lot lately, but so many different things are happening around the country, and you know, in other countries too, but in particular in the United States. I don't know.
Well, that leads right into our first question. So there's been a lot of discussion online about the role of libraries during this global pandemic. What do you think libraries should and also should not be doing right now?
I absolutely think that libraries should be closed right now, especially public libraries, academic libraries too. And this is weird for me to say because for the past 12 years that I've been a public librarian in Brooklyn, when I first got hired in 2008, I was almost, not immediately, but like very soon after, you know, it was the economy turned and we were given pink slips at one point because the budget was being threatened by the mayor at the time, Bloomberg. I'll just say Bloomberg. But not a big fan. So I've been through the roller coaster of, you know, the budget every year, library budgets getting threatened, and even though the mayors and other city officials always treat the library as essential, we don't get funded as though we're essential. So it's really a huge shift for me to be like, no, libraries are not essential right now. You know, we have to close. But it's actually like a sort of a catch 22 or...
Yeah, I think a lot of librarians and library management are struggling with that same thing right now.
Yeah. And I get that. I get that some administrators are feeling scared that if they say right now libraries aren't actually essential, then they will not be funded later on. And I get that. But essential is sort of like there's two essentials. Mm-hmm. There's essential to humanity and society in general, you know, intellectual education and that kind of thing. I think we're essential to our communities, but we're not essential. Big, you know, capital E in terms of actually able to save lives in a physical way. So it's a weird thing to say. But we are still offering, like my library system in particular is still offering virtual programs, virtual reference. You know, we're still working behind the scenes, and I feel very lucky that we're able to do that. We are being supported by our administration, but it was a little dicey for a while, and we didn't know if the buildings were going to close. And I think they absolutely should be closed because so many people do see the library as essential. You know what I mean? So it's a gathering place. It's a place where people congregate and go daily. My particular library branch is a haven after school in particular. So I'm a children's librarian, and after school is the magic hour.
Yeah.
So it's just like wall to wall kids. And how can you make kids social distance themselves? It's impossible. I was even right before we closed, you know, kids would come up and hug me, and I would jokingly be like, no, you know, you have to, let's give each other space. And I try to do that anyway, you know, personal space is a lesson I try to teach that they don't always listen to. But yeah, there's really no way to regulate that in libraries. And we're not trained to do that. We barely had Clorox wipes a couple of weeks ago.
I don't know about your library, but my library is in downtown of, an urban center. And we have a very large homeless population that spend all day there. And so for me, it was like a real struggle because I know that they depend on that, and they come in literally every day and spend all day there, and charge their phones and, you know, sit in the air conditioning because I live in Florida, so it's hot, and read and use the computer and that kind of thing. And so like, I feel for them, but also I don't think that our staff members should have to literally risk their lives to provide that, you know?
Well, it's also risking the unhoused people too. It's everybody. Yeah. It's not just the staff. And that's the thing. It's if we want to be doing what's best for our patrons, that right now means not being open, because if we are open, then people will come. So it's the only way I can see for libraries to be doing the best thing for our communities. And I hate it personally. Like I don't like being at home. You could ask my husband. I go nuts when I have too much, you know, unstructured time. But this is what we have to do. And like I said, luckily, like my library system is providing services still. Mm-hmm. We have a network that's able to do that. Not every library can or is willing to. I'm not really, you know, every single library is different. But we are still serving the community virtually. And that shift is something that I think other libraries might want to focus on for future pandemics or, you know, whatever else happens in life. We're still getting questions on the email and chat reference. So people are still seeking information. They are still seeking library services. And so I think the libraries that are open are plain wrong. And I know some libraries are doing curbside or drive up. I see Jennifer said her library is doing drive up service. I get it. I understand the desire to serve, but I still think it's not doing anybody any favors. For every person that's coming out for books, that's another person on the street, like that you don't necessarily know. You might have it and be asymptomatic. It just doesn't seem worth the risk for me.
My library is doing digital services as well. So like the email and chat reference, you know, help, and we're doing story times and Facebook Live, Instagram Live. So I'm an event planner. So this is like really tough for me because ours got canceled before the library even closed. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it affected us earlier, and it's going to affect us longer, because even when the library does open again, we're not going to have large events, you know?
That's true.
And so we're doing like Instagram cooking classes with some of our regular presenters, and making some videos. Like I've been inviting authors to do these like 3 to 5 minute writing tip videos. I have all the camera equipment, right? I have the lights and the camera and the mounts and everything. And so I did like a how to make bread video and a cake mug video. But then like my coworker tried to film a science experiment, and he doesn't have lights, and he's filming with his cell phone, and he's like, mine doesn't look as good as yours. And I don't think that's the point.
I think people are going to forgive like lower quality things. My library, I wanted to just give them a little shout out. Brooklyn Public Library. If you go to their Brooklyn Public Library family Facebook page in particular, like every branch has a page too, and a lot are doing programs online. The family page is kind of the central one that people can go to. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And the question that you were talking about earlier about book collections, from what I know, our book ordering is centralized, so the branches do not order our own books right now. We have some shared cart situations, but the majority of the ordering is done centrally. But they have pivoted to ebooks. They've shifted most of the collection budget that we have right now to ebooks. So I don't even think they're ordering print books at the moment. And a lot of things have gone to ebooks and audiobooks and, you know, supporting that platform, which is, it's tough because, as you know, probably like the ebook licensing is not always freely given to libraries. It's a bit of a mess in itself, but we are trying to, you know, meet the needs of people who want to read books at home. Mm-hmm. Ken, you know, there's a whole digital divide situation as well. There's so many things coming to light in this situation, and I really just hope we start patching those holes a little better in society in general, and library services too.
I did see some like suburban and rural libraries. I'm on the library think tank, the ALA think tank Facebook group. And there's been so much conversation there. And some of the, especially like suburban and rural libraries have made sure that their Wi-Fi stays on so people mm-hmm. can pull into the parking lot and still use the internet. With urban libraries, it's more challenging because then people have to walk and like get, you know, right next to the building and then you have multiple people there, so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, our Wi-Fi is still on, but it's not necessarily something that I've been encouraging people to use just for that reason, because there will be 50 people sitting outside the branch and that can't be safe either.
Yeah.
So again, it's just, this whole thing flies in the face of almost every librarian I know, you know, like this goes against, we want to be with the people and we want to be serving the people. We want to give them whatever they need and we can't. But that's the thing. Like you just also have to do what's best for them. And right now that's what's best. So the fallout is going to be rough to deal with in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting journey for sure this year. My library, we're a little luckier than others, and we're in our own tax district. Mm-hmm. So there's a specific tax that's earmarked for the library. So a lot of places, the way it works is the tax goes to the county or the city, and then the county and city decides who gets what money. And so I think that will help us a little bit, but also it's a real estate tax. It's tied to you know, property value. And so if those go down, then I know they had that problem in like 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of news, like you were talking about layoffs at publishing houses, and it's happening at libraries too. It's just so unfortunate. It does make me wonder for libraries whose money is already allocated for the year, like why would you not keep your staff on and pay your staff if you can? Mm-hmm. My heart goes out to them. I think it's a horrible situation, and I wish we could fix it. I don't know. I don't, you know, like nobody, nobody knows what they're doing. Some places seem to be handling it better than others.
And I mean, also just like leadership is different in different libraries too, because you see that on the think tank group especially. Some directors are coming in like, yeah, I sent my staff home and I'm paying them. Like, what's the problem? And then there, you see some leaders go on there and literally say, well, why would I pay my staff to do nothing?
Right. There's a disconnect there.
Even if I'm thinking from an economically conservative perspective, like, but if you're paying them, then they're still contributing to the economy. Then they're still able to buy things and keep the economy afloat, you know, versus if you're not paying them, then they're a drain. Then they are taking services and money that they may not have to otherwise.
And it's not healthier for them. Like if they're paid, they can buy food, they can stay home, you know, the whole flatten the curve thing, like that's the whole point. and to take away that safety net doesn't make sense to me. But
yeah. Well, we're gonna we're gonna switch topics. Yeah. Now that everyone is
something a little lighter.
Getting downer over here.
So you're both a children's book author and a librarian. How do you feel those two careers inform and interact with each other?
For me, it's sort of like they aren't that different. Because I wouldn't say I have a children's book career. Like, I feel like I'm a librarian who wrote a book, you know what I mean? Who was lucky. And I'm going to try to write more. Like, I just got a new agent I'm very excited about. Thanks. Yeah. So, but at the same time, like, my heart is in librarianship. And maybe, you know, maybe that's why I'm not so successful. I don't know. I'm not good with business. Like, I'm not good at promoting, I guess, you know, I don't check my book sales. It's weird. Like, I'm always coming at it from a librarian's point of view. But
being a librarian has allowed you to kind of keep your pulse, like your finger on the trend pulse, or like know what parents are looking for in children's books, maybe more so than you would if you were just a casual reader.
I think yes and no. Interestingly, you know, as I'm sure Sarah knows, and all librarians, like, we don't get to read a lot for our jobs. At least I don't. I'm also like the assistant manager of my branch, so every day is just putting out a lot of fires. And I actually right now feel really behind in children's lit, and I'm embarrassed to say that. I have a lot of catching up to do. But yeah, like, what's helped me the most has been doing story time. I would think, what's a book that I would like to read out loud to kids? Like, that's where I came from when writing Edward Gets Messy. What is a story that I want to share? You know, it's a personal story. It's about a pig, basically a pig with anxiety. And that's me. Maybe not the pig part. ask my husband. It's been a little rough around here. But, you know, it's my personal story that I want to share, but also like the medium in which I wanted to share it was informed by my work as a children's librarian, doing story time and interacting with kids on that level. That's my favorite part of it. That's my favorite part of having written a book, I think, is the oral storytelling part, where I get to share it and then see the kids' reactions, and then we talk about it. Like, that's why this is so hard right now. Like, and, you know, I know kids are feeling that on a whole different level, like not seeing their friends. But the social interactive part of it, I think that's the biggest part of how librarianship has informed the writing part.
And it's funny that you say that, because you actually won an award. I can't remember what it's called, that is about picture books that are, I don't remember how the wording was.
I might remember. the Anna Dudney Read Aloud Award.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she wrote the Llama Llama Red Pajama books, and she sadly passed away a few years ago. So they made it an award in her honor. And yeah, Edward won the first one, which was like amazing for me. And it's for new picture books. You know, I think it has to be in the last 5 years of whenever the award is given. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice way to highlight new books. Yeah. So, but that was like the greatest honor I could think of. Even though, like, I think Olga, the illustrator, definitely should have won a Caldecott. You know, but she's from Canada, so we couldn't anyway. So yeah, that was a really nice thing for me.
Jennifer asks, have you read your book to the kids at your library?
No, yeah, I have. It came out in 2016. So I have read it. I don't read it that often, and I don't do story time every week now that I'm a manager. Mm-hmm. But I have read it to kids at the library, and I've visited a bunch of schools in the tri-state area and read it to kids there. And I did a virtual story time last week, 2 weeks ago. Time has no meaning anymore. For the new agency that I belong to, Stimola, They're doing a great program series called Stimola Live, where the authors and illustrators are doing workshops and read alouds and cool things like that. You can find them on YouTube. But I did a read aloud for that. So I'm still trying to share, but it's hard. This is a really hard time. And I don't even have it that hard. You know, I know it's so much harder for healthcare workers. Like I can't, my brain has like shut down thinking about that, because I feel very helpless. But any little things I can do from here, you know, I will try to do. I don't know if that answered the question. I probably went way off.
So switching gears just a little bit, authors are often looking for more ways to get involved with libraries. What are some of the ways, I guess, in more normal times that your library works with authors?
There's no like black and white way, I don't think. In my system, you know, there's 58 branches and then the central branch. And central has its own programming department. So probably what the kind of thing you do, Sarah, where you're booking events, authors and musicians and things like that. So they have a very large schedule. Not so much now, though they are still doing things virtually. So sometimes there's like a central department that does it. And then other times, you know, we have local authors that I just happen to get to know. You know, they come in with their kids or they come in and they talk to us, oh, I've written a book, you know, and we try to kind of work around, you know, work in some programming for them on the branch level. So really just like I would suggest, you know, maybe not like just cold call a library and say, hey, buy my book and, you know, let me do a program, but get to know the staff and the community, build up a web presence for yourself, maybe if you want to get involved in a library and support the library. It's often a symbiotic relationship, you know?
Yeah. I love that you say that, because we definitely have people. So we have, I'm planning author events. That's the main gist of my job. And we definitely have, so we have a local author festival 3 times a year. And we have people who will email us like the week before and be like, I want to be on the local author festival. And I'm like, well, it's full and it's been full for 3 months, but I can put you on the waiting list. But I definitely recommend you like, you know, come to the event and check it out and just see how it is. And they never show up. Literally only one person has ever taken me up on that invitation. And then we get people contacting us all the time who want to do something that we don't do. Is this specifically against our policy? Like we don't allow, for example, picture book authors to read at our story times because we have paid storytellers who do that. And also it's like, you know, we don't want to have to go through making sure, you know, what is it called? Background check and all of that stuff, right? And so there are things specifically that we don't do. And I think if you spend a little time around the library's programming, then it will help you understand better what you can do for the library, you know?
Yeah, it's sort of like a job interview in a way. Like you don't just go to the, not researching the company. Yeah, that's good advice.
Julia, you have a question.
I do. You've written.
We're talking about your third professional self now.
Yeah, your third. You must be incredibly busy. I can't really imagine. You've written for a couple of different bookish news outlets. What suggestions do you have for authors who are trying to get coverage of their books?
Boy. Authors are trying to get like book reviews?
Yeah, or like coverage on Book Riot or something like that.
Sarah probably can answer that one better. I haven't I love Book Riot. I haven't written for Book Riot in a while. I think what helped me back when I was trying to do that is sort of make, and I think I said this a little bit before, like make a presence for yourself, you know, be what you want to see, be what you want to see or something like that. Like if you want to write for a site like Book Riot, you know, make a blog for yourself, get on Twitter. I think social networking, especially right now, people are kind of a captive audience. Just write the kind of things that you want to be paid to write if you're not being paid at the moment, if that makes sense. But also, like, don't chase trends, I don't think. I think you still have to sort of be true to yourself, as trite as that sounds. If you're not interested in children's books, like, don't write children's books. Don't try to grab onto something, or YA, you know. I'm sure you understand that. Like, don't write to the trends.
Yeah.
In a way. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the best way. Yeah, I had Amanda Nelson on I think the second episode in October. We asked her a similar question. So she had some answers there too, if you want to go back and watch that as well. Oh
yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, Amanda's full of information.
She's great. All right, so it is time for Ebony, are you ready? The question, what is the most important book you've ever read and why?
I'm sorry, I'm distracted by the cat.
I'm sorry. She's like whenever you push her away too, it just makes her more determined to come back. So
she's tenacious. I like it. Okay, so were you asking me that question?
Yeah, what's the most important book you've ever read and why?
I don't know how to answer that. Because for me, I don't know how to answer that in the sense of like differentiating it from my favorite book. Because I think it's probably a different question, but I don't have a different answer. Can I cheat and be like, the most important book I've read recently is Know My Name by Chanel Miller, documenting her, you know, sexual assault by Brock Turner and the trial and all that. Like, that book was like a punch in the face. And I think everybody, like literally everybody, should read it. It's extremely important right now. So that is the most important book I've read lately. But then my favorite book and the most important book to me is still A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. Like, I will say that every time. Just because it changed me as a reader, and it influenced me as a writer, and even as a librarian, because there was a very grumpy Brooklyn librarian in the book, and I try not to be like that. And it just
are you from Brooklyn, or
I'm from Long Island, which is not that far from Brooklyn, so it's not the same, obviously, but I'm about an hour and a half from where I grew up. But it feels different. I always wanted to live in the city, you know. Mm-hmm. Growing up, and then Brooklyn, like, there was New York City, and then Brooklyn was this whole other thing. Like, it seemed like a whole other country. And now I live there, and that probably has no small part into A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. And my grandmother grew up here, so it just felt very personal. And if you haven't read the book, I suggest it. Like, some things obviously have not aged very well, but the writing is so beautiful, and it celebrates human experiences in a universal way. That cat is something to say. She does not watch
my book. All the time. All the time.
Yeah.
So Ebony always comments on the faces people make when I ask that question. But you were distracted by the cat. So
thank you. Thank you, cat. Cat saved me.
Luckily my cat stays off during this. She always comes on my work calls. It's like she knows. All right. Rita, thank you so much for joining us. We have your information in the description. So if you want to find Rita on Twitter or Instagram or look at our website, you can find that info in the description down below. And Julie and I have a couple more things before we close the show. So we're going to say goodbye to Rita. And
thank you.
Thank you for joining.
Stay safe, everyone.
Oh yeah. So, I think I cut her off. So Rita, by the way, you can hang out and talk to us afterwards, or you can just go ahead and head off if you need to. So. All right. Everyone's saying bye to Rita. Cool. Okay. So it is time for our audiobook of the week. And I'm very excited because I'm doing something extra this week. I'm going to do an audiobook giveaway. And so first I'll talk about the audiobook of the week. Let me get the cover up. It is Hollywood Homicide by Kelly Garrett. So this is a book that came out a while ago, but the audiobook just came out last month. And it's narrated by Bonnie Turpin, who is one of my very favorite audiobook narrators. And this is what I really liked, what Kirkus, this quote from Kirkus: veteran TV writer Garrett uses her cold case experience to inform her debut, which sets up more than one charming character and isn't afraid to go cynical on all things LA. Kevin, that's Kelly. That is Kelly. So Kelly is actually a friend of mine, and she was the second guest co-host on this show. But I just got to listen to the audiobook, and I finished it today, and I immediately started listening to the sequel. So let me get that off the screen, and I see a whole lot of comments coming in. Did you remember a quote? Yeah, I have a quote this week. That'll be later. I want to read that. That's good, Jennifer. You could win an audiobook of it if you listen in the next 5 minutes. Since I am still getting paid, and I feel very fortunate that I'm still getting paid, I don't have a lot of money, but I wanted to do something. And I heard that audiobooks consumption were going down because people aren't commuting as much. And then I subscribed to Libro FM, and which is like it's like Audible, but it supports indie bookstores. And so I'm going to be giving away an audiobook. Tamara should produce Pub Talk, keeping you on track. Then Kevin's distracting me. Oh, this is the best. We're just on Kevin's computer. I see. And so I'm going to give away to someone who is watching live right now. And the way that I'm going to do it is I'm just going to pick a number, and I'll tell Julia my number in our private chat so she can verify that I'm not cheating. And pick a number, let's say 1 through 50, and the first person who guesses it will get it. But you can't guess again until I've told you whether or not it's right. So 1 through 50, go. And I know it takes like 10, 15 seconds for comments to come through. There's a little bit of lag, so it's not going to happen right away. But so I'm going to tell you about Hollywood Homicide while we're waiting for those comments to come through. Hollywood Homicide is about a former actress who they all just showed up. A former actress who her claim to fame was she was like a fast food on a fast food commercial, and everyone recognizes her from that. And she's broke, and her parents are losing their house. And she sees a reward for tips to solve a crime. And she realizes she was there when the crime happened. And so she's trying to track down details and remember details so she can help solve the crime. And then she gets more and more into it. It turns out she has a kind of a knack for it, even though she accuses a lot of false suspects in the process. And it's really funny, and it's narrated by my favorite narrator ever. But if you win, you get to pick from any of my audiobooks of the week since we started the show. And I have a list. You don't have to remember them. So I can send you a list if you're the winner. All right. So we're going to start. Jay said 43. That is not, I had to double check because I'm not really sure what my number was. Jennifer said 14. And Ebony said 17, which was my number. Yeah. So Ebony, you can like message me or email me. I know you have several ways of getting in contact with me, and I will send you the list. Or if you already know what you want, you can just tell me what you want and send me your email address, and I'll send you that that audiobook. So cool. That was fun.
Yay.
And I think I'm going to keep doing this while I'm still getting paid for as long as I can. So hopefully, yeah, someone else will win next week. Oh, look at you guys. Yay, Ebony. Congrats, Ebony.
knocking one off her TBR list. That is true. Every time I talk about audiobook of the week, Ebony says, I'm adding that to my TBR list. So
cool.
Yeah, she probably already has a list. All right, so now it is time for the viewer poll. Are you reading more or less than usual in the time of COVID-19? And I'm going to pull up the poll. I'm going to find it. There it is. And it will come up in just a second. There it is. Okay. So I think this was like the most people who have ever voted in a Pub Talk Live poll. Are you reading more or less than usual in this time? And 46% said less than usual, 26% said more than usual, and about 29% are in about the same as usual. How about you, Julia?
I mean, I voted less than usual. I think I'm starting to kind of ease back into my kind of about the same. But I definitely, I'm in Seattle, so I'm like one of the first people probably who went into lockdown. In our house, we've been locking down since March 2nd. So we're now 6 weeks into this. Wow. And I think the first like kind of 2 or 3 weeks, I was just so distracted by everything that I couldn't even read. Like writing was completely out the window. Reading was out the window. Like I was either looking at the news or I was like getting so anxious I had to take my medication or like just running around my house freaking out. Or playing games. And now sort of like 6 weeks in, like I've been able to do a little bit more work. Like I would say that my writing productivity is still not where it was, but it's not terrible either. And I've started reading more. I do read a lot of audiobooks. So I've gotten through a couple of audiobooks while we've been on lockdown, maybe one or two paper books in the last 6 weeks, which is pretty dire for me. On the paper book situation, but it's starting to even out. So what about you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you froze.
So I saw a couple of people respond and they said that they couldn't focus. And I understand that. I actually don't read a lot of print books anyway. But I thought that I would, but I mean, because I'm working from home, and then I'm also writing from home in the same space. I've been struggling with that. But also I've been helping Everywhere Book Fest with, I'm their lead video producer. And so my time is filled and I've been helping other people with various you know, things. And so I haven't read, but I actually have been listening to audiobooks more, which is weird because before I never listened to audiobooks except in the car. And I only have like a 15-minute drive to work, and that's only because of traffic. But since I haven't been going to work, I haven't been getting my steps, so I've been taking long walks, mm-hmm. and I listen to audiobooks during those. And so that's why I've been like listening to more, because I'll take an hour walk, and I'm listening to more than I would, you know, normally. So I have been listening to more audiobooks and. I basically listened to Hollywood Homicide in like a day and a half because I was packing. So I was listening while I was packing.
I think since this has started on audio, I've read Gideon the Ninth and Sky in the Deep.
Mm. Oh, you just read Gideon the Ninth.
Yeah, I just read it. It was really fresh.
I love that.
And I read it because I'm really like, I'm always really dubious about the hype train. And so many people were like, oh, you're going to love this. It's so good. And I was just like, no, like, it can't be this good. Like, whatever. And then I read it and I was like, it was this good. Like, fuck it. Like, I should have read it a year ago.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But I'm also kind of glad I didn't read it a year ago because then I would have to wait like an entire year and a half for the sequel. So, yeah, I just read it. I read Compass Rose in paperback, which is really good too. It's kind of like a lesbian futuristic, like, they're kind of pirates, but not, it's hard to describe, but it was good.
Okay.
Yeah, I read Ink Mistress, which is a YA. Mm-hmm. So I've read, I guess, 4 books, but that's still, I usually read a book a week is my normal pace, so.
Cool. I have 4 books, actually 5 now, sitting on my coffee table that I put out a month ago and still have not read pages of any of them. So, but maybe when I move out to the country, tomorrow. Maybe I'll find some time. All right, cool. So it looks like a lot of people are reading less than usual. I think a lot of people are having trouble focusing and kind of like what, and I think it will come in waves too. Like you said, you know, the first 2 weeks was just, and I feel like the same way, like Orlando really starts taking it seriously around like March 15th ish. Mm-hmm. And definitely those first 2 weeks I was like watching every press conference and like reading everything I could. And now I'm like, DeSantis, well, it doesn't help our governors, you know, a disaster. But so I'm like, I'm not listening to that anymore.
Yeah, I go in waves with that. Like some days I'll still, like I sometimes watch Cuomo's briefing, even though I don't even live in New York, just because like it's so like orderly and clear. But I guess like this week I've finally started to feel a little bit better about Washington, at least, like just because Washington, like we've been in this for so long that it's starting to seem like the new normal a little bit, but scarily. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. We're going to close out with our quote of the week. So I'm going to pull that up. It's a very short one, but I really like it. A good book is an event in my life. I love that. Yeah. And I think a lot of the answers that we get about that most important book question, a lot of them actually have to deal with that, you know, they reading the book to them was a significant event in their life. So cool. All right, Julia, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad I was able to get you on. And you can find all of Julia's information in the comments down below, her website, Twitter. I can't remember what else, but the website and Twitter is definitely there. Oh, and Instagram. And yeah, follow her and check out her books because they're awesome. And I'm going to just close out a couple things. So thank you, Julia. See you in a minute. All right. So if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like and subscribe somewhere down there so you don't miss another episode. Tell your friends. Thank you so much. I saw a couple of y'all sharing and I just really appreciate that. And also you can subscribe via the email in the description as well as find our Patreon. And thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. I love having you in Patreon, and whenever I announce the guests, you always get really excited and that just makes me so happy. And for the ones who provide questions for our guests too, as well. Social media for our guests is in the description along with Pub Talk Live social media. And I actually have next week's episode scheduled and ready to go. So you're going to see that on the outro, but we're going to have actually two special guests in the next episode. So the co-host is going to be, I can't remember her name right now. It's an L something. And then Sarah Megabo and her, one of her authors is going to be a joint special guest. And so we're going to be able to talk to one of my favorite literary agents in the business and one of her authors. So you'll see all that on the outro. Thank you. Have a good night. Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe.